Today on the More to Life podcast, we will hear from Nicole. Born in a family, the youngest of 11 other siblings, she was left a single child alone with her father after her mom passed away when she was only two. Raised as an only child with her dad on a remote farm in Arizona, her story is one you won't forget. She speaks about the severe challenges faced as a very young child, being left to fend for herself at 7 years old, suffering abuse and loss most of us can't comprehend. Rescued by a sister at 11 years old, her life began to turn around. Let's have a listen and hear this amazing redemption story and where God has brought her now. Hello, I'm Rebecca Robinson, your host for the More to Life podcast in West Kelowna. Stories of people's lives have always fascinated me, and I believe they're one of the best gifts we can give. Our testimonies on how God delivers us through challenges or dark places inevitably gives hope and can help others see a light at the end of their tunnel. Join me as I interview varied guests who bravely tell their stories for us to be encouraged by. I want to welcome Nicole Katzel to the More to Life podcast today. Nicole is a missionary at Maple Springs Bible Camp, and she serves as administrative and operations manager. Her and her husband, Dyson, married 3 years now, live on site at Maple Springs Bible Camp in Peachland. She has been in the Okanagan for 11 years, but she was born and raised in Arizona. Thank you so much for coming today, Nicole, for one of our very first episodes of the Emmanuel Church podcast. I'd like to start as far back as you can remember first, and then maybe we'll go a bit back into, you know, your heritage and your background, wherever you'd like to start us off. If you can paint a bit of a picture of your early years and lead us from there.
Yeah, no problem. So I grew up in Arizona. So as many of you know, that is very hot desert. I grew up a single child, even though I'm number 13 of many siblings, but I grew up because I'm the youngest, so the closest sibling I have is like 10 years apart. So it was just me and my dad as I was growing up. My mom passed when I was two, so I didn't really know her. I just get a whole bunch of stories about her. So I basically was raised with my dad, who was Jewish most of the time. And then my mom's side of the family is like Catholic, so very like contradicting faiths. I never really paid attention to any of that. I think my years as a kid, I remember lots of fun memories, like, you know, riding out on your bike, no helmet, doing whatever you want in like the streets and stuff like that. We lived out in like a farm country area with like lots of horses and like cows. It was a really quiet town. I had a couple of friends. They lived right next door to us, and they were like First Nations, and like we always like played and stuff like that. I'm also First Nations myself, but only half, so
which First Nation do you know?
I'm Apache.
And what happened with your mom? You were only two, you said, when she passed away. Do you know?
Yes. So originally I was told very many different stories, but my mom passed because she had HIV, so the disease eventually caught up with her. Luckily, I was not born with it. I got tested many years just to make sure, and I wasn't born with it, so it was like a little bit of like a miracle to start out my life.
Wow, definitely. And she had 13 kids.
They're not all from the same mom. Okay. I'm the only one with my mother. They are all the same father.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. And so you were with your dad on the farm, just the two of you, and where were your other siblings then?
I'm the only one in Arizona, so my dad was first a Canadian citizen, so he had a lot of the kids in Canada. So, and then he moved to the States when he was, I'm going to say like 40, and then that's where he met my mom. So then he was going to start, I think, a bigger family out here, but he only got one before my mom passed away. So
it was your mom's side that was Apache?
It's like my grandfather's side, yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay. And any kind of heritage or traditions were passed down to the family from that, or?
Unfortunately not. My dad kept me very apart from my mom's side, actually. he's a little quirky is the way I want to describe it, but he actually had many mental illnesses that he has passed on to quite a few of our family. Luckily I didn't get anything. But with that, where I said I had a normal childhood, to me it seemed normal, but whenever I did something wrong or I was like, you know, did normal things that kids would do, I was often punished with like physical punishment. So anything that he had in his hand, or sometimes he would trap me in a room or something like that, probably like really horrible things that it's like, that shouldn't be how you treat a child. But as I was a kid, I was like, this seems, you know, I did something wrong. This is the punishment for it. Maybe I like, that makes sense. I deserve it. So, and I never talked about it with any of my mom's side. So none of my mom's side knew what was happening. And I never told anyone, actually. I had a couple times to like speak out about it as like a child, but I was always like, it was just me and him. So we had this like,
I can imagine seclusiveness. It was pretty scary sometimes, just the two of you.
Yep.
And you would have gone to school and had friends, or did anybody kind of visit, or?
No one visited. So my dad was a builder. So he built his own house, and our house was always partially built. It never really got finished before he passed away. So we lived in a house that was like kind of falling apart in some ways. But it was still, you know, good enough home to grow up in. Not even my mom's side of my family was really allowed to visit. I think I remember one significant moment where they visited when I was young, and it was my dad didn't really believe in Christmas because he was Jewish, so he believed in Hanukkah, but he didn't really like the giving of presents. So my family refused to let me skip Christmas because they had bought me all these gifts. And I remember they came out, and we didn't really have like a doorbell or anything like that, and they came around like the side of our house. All our windows are kind of like boarded up because he was still in the process of fixing everything. And I just remember someone was knocking on the window, and I look over, and there's my grandfather outside with my grandmother, and she's holding a whole bunch of presents, and he's like, let us in, we are doing Christmas here. So I think that was like the first time ever that they had like a look at the house and like what I was kind of living with. I think I was like 6 at the time.
Wow. So kind of your first Christmas, and maybe not so many after that. So
yeah.
Thank you. Okay. So that does give us a good idea of your childhood. And then it says in your testimony, I'm just looking at kind of an overview, that there was a change that happened at 11 years old.
Yes. So we were just supposed to visit. So my sister, or I guess my aunt, lives up in Canada, and we just were coming for a visit. So we drove all the way out in our big white van, you know, meant for long road trips. And we visited her. She lived in Langley at the time. And so we were out just to visit during spring break. It was a very impromptu thing. I was actually supposed to have like a birthday party that my grandmother planned, like, because my birthday is within spring break every single year. But you know, things change. I didn't know at the time, but the reason for the impromptu travel time was he was actually trying to get away from social services in the States. I never knew that. But someone had called about like the living situation and like some things that they had seen that I was unaware of, and they were gonna come out and do like a welfare check, and he decided that he didn't want that, and he drove all the way across the border. But as we were traveling, you know, it takes like 3 days to travel from Arizona all the way to Canada. He got really sick during the travel. He wasn't really feeling well. And then we stopped at his brother's house, who lived halfway between here and Canada. I don't remember at the time where it was. He felt a little bit better after that, and then we kept traveling. But once we got in, it was kind of like I was realizing how sick he was. He was getting really pale and like shaky, and like he was older, significantly older, like he's almost 70 at this point when I was 11. And so while I was there, the rest of my siblings knew what was happening because it had happened to them. So my eldest sister, Cindy, she immediately was like, let's go out to dinner. It was like your birthday recently. And like, she made it this happy event, and she tried to convince my dad, oh, and you don't need to come. It's okay. Like, we can just take her. Like, I know you're tired, like relax and sleep. So they left him back at my other sister's house. Kindness is her name. A little bit weird of names. That's kind of how my father was. Everyone has a little bit ridiculous names in our family. But we all went out, and then she kind of like cornered me and was like, I know that this is happening to you. She's like, but you need to tell me whether or not you want help. So in that moment, I had to like make a decision. I was like, do I want help? Like, it had recently been getting worse, like with the abuse and stuff like that, or the abandonment. Sometimes he'd leave on really long like work trips, and I'd be left home alone to do everything myself, you know, get myself to school.
Like, for how long?
Stuff like that. Sometimes weeks.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
The longest one I remember is when I think I was 7. He left for 2 weeks, and he didn't drop me off at my grandma's house or anything like that. And we didn't have a house phone or anything like that, so I couldn't call anyone. So for 2 weeks, I basically lived by myself.
Wow, so. Nicole. You just had to learn a lot of life way too fast, way too young.
Yeah.
Okay, so Cindy, a savior.
Yes, very much. She apparently had been trying many times to get me from my father, but it was very difficult, her being in Canada and me being in the States. Governments don't always work together do stuff well. But this time she was like, I finally have you, and like, enough. Like, and so in that moment I made the decision and I said, yes, I want help. I don't know what changed. I'd been asked plenty of other times when certain things would come up, but in that moment it just felt like the right time. But I don't think the decision really hit until I was like going to bed, and you know, you stop to like think about everything when you're lying in bed and it's quiet. And that's when it like really hit that everything would probably be changing. And I just left the only person in my life that I really knew. I just left him. And so I definitely, till this day, that is probably the hardest I have ever cried. I woke up and just bawling, which apparently was very poor timing, according to my sister, because she was on the phone with the social worker. You know, she was figuring stuff out. And then the social worker heard the crying, and then they called the cops because they thought they were forcing me to stay. Yeah. And it was like, that wasn't what was happening at all. I was just having my own little moment. And then cops came and stuff like that. And I don't even remember, because I cried so hard that I just passed out.
Wow.
So.
Wow. It was just the sudden wall hit you of all the change that was about to come your way. And at 11, you can't even process everything that's happening.
No. Now I can process a lot of it, but definitely during the time it was like just a whole bunch of blur.
Yeah. And so what happened after that?
So social workers kind of like got it all together, and they're like, okay, you can take her home. So Cindy took me to her home. She kind of set me up in her house with her kids. So I then all of a sudden started growing up with 3 brothers. So I'm sure it was very interesting.
There's
for
a
them.
Story there for
yeah.
sure.
Out of time. Oh boy. But yeah, so it was a weird couple of months. It was very busy. I was seeing psychologists and doctors, and I think a couple of them were like law social workers, and like, oh, just so many people. I couldn't even like name half of them that I had to see. They had to like test all these different things. And just like, cause once they heard a bit of my story about like the neglect and stuff like that, they had to get me so many appointments for like eye doctors and stuff like that, just because they're like, you don't have any medical information. And I was like, no, I know nothing. Mm-hmm. So they really, within those first couple months, like, did a whole bunch of stuff. A lot of it was a blur after April 10th, because that's when I heard that my father had passed away due to cancer.
And how soon after was that, that when you left?
So I remember that I left March 24th 2008. That is the day that I decided to make a whole change, and then found out April 10th that he had passed away.
Of that same year?
Yeah.
Right after?
Right after.
And you had no idea he even had cancer?
Nope.
Wow.
I had like speculations that he was sick, but right. as a child, I didn't really know what that meant.
And he wasn't seeking treatment, of course, or anything?
No.
Not telling anybody?
Stubborn runs in our family.
Yeah.
On both sides. All of them refused treatment, even my grandfather. He died after his fifth heart attack when he refused to change his lifestyle.
Oh my goodness, he thought, what's one more heart attack?
I'm yeah. stubborn. Oh, it runs in the family.
Wow. What would you say you're stubborn about?
I just have that stubborn personality about, I would say, certain decisions. Like, once I've made a decision, that is my decision. And always people are like, well, you could change your mind. I'm like, no, I've made my decision. Like, you know, I might be wrong, but I'm going to stick with it.
Right. Yeah. Clear-headed, maybe. Let's call it that.
Yeah.
Not stubborn. Okay. Thank you. All right. So you're starting a more normal life in the midst with a family. Did you attend a funeral or anything for your dad?
I'm not entirely sure what happened, but I said some stuff about my uncle who was married to my Aunt Lorraine, who is my dad's sister. Unfortunately, he had like sexually abused me in the past. And when that came out, that side of the family thought I was lying. And I was like, why would I lie about something like that? And so there was this big riff now in the family, so I was unable to attend the funeral. I had to wait because they threatened our side of the family like with violence if we arrived at the funeral. So we waited a couple days, and then I was finally, I think I was able to visit him at Artie, the gravesite, like maybe like a week after.
And was he buried in Canada?
He was buried, yeah. He was buried in Canada.
Yeah.
In Langley, the one and only cemetery they have out there. So, yeah, no, it was unfortunate, but I didn't have to worry, unfortunately, about them for long because they were fighting against it. But suddenly that side of the family all started passing away in like a significant number. And it, I don't even know who's really still like living on that side, actually, because we don't talk to them anymore.
They were all around that same aging, 70, 80.
Yeah. Well, my dad's sister is older than him, so he was the youngest.
Oh,
so
okay.
It kind of makes sense.
How many siblings did he have?
Just three, I think. So I think he had a sister. Oh, I guess he was the third, a sister and a brother. I haven't heard of any others, so that I know of. But
right. Wow. Okay. All right. So did you start going to middle school, high school? How did that go as you came out of this kind of situation into a new one?
Yeah. So I started in elementary school. I got grade 6 before moved into middle school. And I would say that, man, so much of it is a blur. But the one thing I do remember is my sister was like, "Hey, you can't sit here the entire summer and sulk. So I'm sending you to a camp." So she picked a random camp out of a brochure and went, "Look, this one's in Peachland, Maple Springs. Let's go."
Oh, wow.
So she took all three of us out. The oldest one, Dominic, he stayed behind because he was already in his teenage years. And he's like, "I'm not staying at this camp." But the other two, Devin and Dre, they're the closest age in me. One's older, one's younger. We all attended the camp together that week. And it definitely like brought me into like what being a kid actually meant, just because I felt like I was like a lot older sometimes, but then also a lot younger in like other maturity aspects.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So being there was like a real twist. I was like actually able to experience it as like a kid, and I was able to interact with other kids. Actually growing up, I didn't have many friends because of just like how weird I was, because of how my dad raised me so sheltered from like the world and like standard stuff that is standard knowledge, but I didn't know.
Yeah. Not developed. Yeah.
So that was the first time I remember like being a kid. I remember the years that I attended while I was young and in middle school, they tried to get me to open up, but I wasn't having it. I was like, you know what? I'm just treating this as, this is a fun loving place that I feel safe. I'm just going to do what I need to, and I'm not looking to the past at all. And so I really did enjoy those summers.
So you went back.
Yeah, I went back times, every single year.
Every year.
If I could go twice, if the social worker would let me, I would go twice. It's one of the cheapest camps actually around BC, lowest cost price. So it was really easy for me to attend 2 weeks because that's like the charge of like 1 week at a different camp. So it was usually pretty easy.
Mm-hmm. And so 16, you clearly remember making a new choice for your life.
Yes. So they have an LIT program at Maple Springs, and Laura was our LIT leader, and she really started shaping me in like middle school and like a little bit into high school of like LIT means to a leader in training. So she started shaping me and being like, okay, so this is what faith is like actually, and like you kind of have to define it yourself. And she was talking a lot about redemption, which for my life, I needed a lot of redemption. I needed a redeemer to redeem a lot of what had happened in the past. And when I first became a leader, so 16 is when you first can become the leader, I stayed the entire summer at camp. So I spent 9 weeks at camp leading other kids to Jesus. I wasn't like 100% in my faith at that point either, but I was like, I know that this is something good. This is something great. And like all these people around here, they're just showing God's love so well that like I'm able to see just, it was very black and white of like, this was like a bad thing in my life. And like Jesus is good. So at the end of the summer, actually my husband and somebody else was getting baptized. And I pulled Mark aside. He was our program director at the time. And I said, I've thought a lot about this. And he's like, I want to get baptized as well. I was like, I think it's time. Like, it's time that I take whatever was in the past and I'm going to let it go. And also, I want to, like, live for faith now. Like, I want that to be my decision. And he was ecstatic. He talked a little bit more about it, you know, what baptism is and, like, what it means. But on a thunderstorm afternoon, so literally poured rain on the last day of camp, we went anyways down to the creek, and the three of us all got baptized in the rushing of the creek. The creek was luckily a little bit higher, so it was a pretty easy dunk. Normally you have to like bend your knees a lot, but it was pretty easy. So yeah, I got baptized, and I think that was like the for real like decision I made about Jesus, being like, it's going to be hard. It doesn't mean once I'm baptized that everything's going to like work out and it's going to be great and my life's going to be good, but it's meaning that every step that I take, even if I take a couple steps backwards, that I'm going for Jesus in all of this. So
mm-hmm. And so how was life after camp when you would go back home and live with your sister again?
My sister is great. She has her own mental illnesses as well, which was ending up in a whole different form of abuse, unfortunately. But in hindsight now, I don't blame her for anything. Like, I have a lot of grace for that. Mm-hmm. Like, it just sometimes with understanding brings like grace. And absolutely. Like, I think definitely God has a lot to do with that as well. Family life was chaotic at home. There was definitely a lot going on whenever I was home. With her mental illness, often she would get like panic terrors, and the police didn't usually help by showing up because if she was screaming because of terrors or stuff like that, because she had a lot of unresolved stuff that had happened in her childhood. I was just lucky enough to get out at a good time for me, and she made that happen. So life at home was chaotic, and I still was kind of raising myself for the mm-hmm. most part. Mm-hmm. But
how much older were her sons that you lived with?
So Dominic, I think he's like 8 years older than us. But Devin, he's like a couple months older than me, but he was in a whole grade ahead of me, which worked because I feel like if we're in the same grade, we would have bit each other's heads off, you know. And then Dre, he's younger by 1 year. So
And how was their experience at Maple Springs?
Dre, unfortunately, was allergic to everything at the camp, so he didn't end up going for very long. Devin was really, really invested as an LIT, and then once we made that transition to LIT to leader, it kind of just fell away. Fortunately, to this day, I don't really know where their faith is at right now. Like, I feel like it's still there, but it's not, like, a prominent decision in their life. Yeah, so
wonderful. That's incredible. What a breakthrough that you had, that experience. And so how so many people, when they start a relationship with God, they attribute fatherly characters that was the only father relationship they knew, which kind of can create a skewed relationship towards God. So how would you say you worked through that, or have you? I shouldn't assume, obviously, but it's, you know, something to think about in my own case as well.
I definitely in the past could not think of him like that. I had such a miscued view of like what a father was. So I was like, I can't treat you like I know that this relationship's going to work this way. So he was often more of a friend and someone safe. So actually, I was told a couple years back, someone was giving a prophetic word to his like youth leaders. And I didn't really know this man whatsoever. He was brand new and he had like quite a few words for me. So he told me, he's like, oh man, I just see that you have struggled so much in your life. And he's like, and in our words, it seems unfair, everything that happened to you. And he talked a lot about like what had happened and like, but he was like, but I've also seen that you're being redeemed. He's like, you are currently like getting to this point in your life where one day you're going to look back and you're not going to remember all that horrible stuff. You're going to be like, oh yeah, that did happen. But you're going to look at this part of your life and be like, look at how much good came out of that instead. Mm. And he told me I'd find a righteous man, which I did end up at that time, a couple of years later, finding my husband, which was, it's just crazy how his promises like do come out when like, you know, when they're said. And then he also told me, he's like, you haven't been able to see God as your father. And he's like, I want you to let you know that that's changing. What he didn't realize that in my life that was actually currently changing. So I started working at Maple Springs like full time in 2018. Camp, when we work there, it really becomes like a part of your family, not just because you all live on site and really close, but just like our journeys together are like just so closely knitted that it's really easy to like depend on one another. And I became really close with the Berg family. So originally Kayla, she's like my other half, my best friend. She originally was the first Berg I came into contact with. And I was just like so excited to be her friend, even though of the age, a little bit of an age gap, but we just clicked and it just worked. And she started bringing me to her family a lot more. So the Berg family consists of their dad, Daryl, their mom, Debbie, and then Tiana's the middle sibling, and then Emily is the youngest sibling. She's the one that recently got married, that Jeff announced. Yeah. So I started coming more into their family, like for family dinners and stuff like that. And like they started like hearing a little bit about, you know, what I have grown up with, what I was currently living in. And they were shocked, for one, that I had come through with such like a positive attitude. That one, all Jesus. I definitely wouldn't have had a positive attitude had I gone any other direction. But I was just, they were surprised that I had such a steadfast, like, you know, life at this point that I was choosing to do, that I could have gone
We see different treatments for different traumatic pasts in kids and teens and adults and depression and dealing with trauma and all which way that we can try and fix this or numb that. And I can relate. All Jesus, it just pulls you through. So who would you say Jesus is to you now?
I can't sum him up in one word anymore. He used to be like specifically one thing at a time. Now I just, I kind of like, Jesus is like the person I talk to, like on a regular basis, like a friend or like a father. Just because I feel like because he came as a human, we have like more of a closer connection, you know? It just, you know, that he's lived kind of like the same life that we have and has experienced all that. Same thing as where I see is like the God is like, he's the all-powerful. He's everything that he talks about in like the Old Testament. Like he did all these wonders and miracles and still forgives us even when, you know, we continue to make the same mistakes sometimes. That's kind of how I like, see that. But he is just so many things. I would say Redeemer is definitely one of my biggest ones that's written across my life. Right after like living through all that, the next one would be like, he really is the Prince of Peace, because he gave me all this peace about what has happened in my life. And he also taught me how to live in peace, because actually living in chaos 24/7, I realized I didn't know how to live like a calm, happy life. I was like, I've been like always prepared to like do whatever I need to do to get like through, you know, my life. And like, I'm always calm in all those situations. That it actually was weird that I was uneasy when everything was like calm and like normal.
Doubtful.
Yeah, I was like, I was like, when's the thing gonna happen? Or I was just like always like prepared. And I'm like, I don't have to be prepared for anything. Like, I can just
rest,
breathe, and have peace. But it definitely still to this day takes me a little bit to be like, I don't have to expect the worst. It's just I can live in this peace. But I would definitely say that it's given me skills in other things. So at camp, I'm like the first aid attendant. I would say that most of the time, like even when something big happens, I'm like pretty calm and I'm like, yeah, no, it's not the worst I've seen. We're okay. And like, everyone's like, how can you just have such a calm? And I'm like, I don't know.
Because
probably my life has told me that this is not the worst of it. And we're going to get through it. So,
You've come out of that situation with such an ability to assist in a calm, peaceful manner. It's no wonder at a camp where there's, you know, you never know what you're going to get, really. I understand that. I'm a teacher in middle school, and you just don't know what day you're walking into. So, yeah, calm. And so what brought you to Emmanuel Church? Can you tell us that?
While me and my husband were engaged, we realized that we needed a church that we both wanted to grow in, you know. Currently, I was going to New Life in Kelowna, and they are definitely more, I don't know how to put it, like Holy Spirit kind of like. They're very spiritual people, which is great, but that's kind of all they had. Like, they had just like this large body of spiritual people, and not none of the other gifts for some reason had collected there. Dyson couldn't do it. He's like, I need a little bit of balance. Like, I need a little bit of like, everyone has like a little bit of something so that you're growing. 'Cause it was too much for him. And I was like, that is fair. I needed that church for a couple of years of my life. 'Cause I needed to see like the spiritual side of Jesus and like know his promises are true when they're called out. And that was great. He was currently going to like a church that kind of like popped up in Peachland, and it was a very small, tightly knit church. And I was like, I mean, I don't have anything against tightly knit, but I was like, that's just a little too small though. Then you just have this very small pool of people that they're not able to grow you either, because after a certain point, that's all they have to offer. So we started going from church to church. Went to a couple churches and we're like, nope. Doesn't feel right. I don't know why. And then we ended up at Emmanuel just before COVID hit. And we attended and we're like, I feel like this is kind of like the church that we kind of want to go to. Like, they seem to have the right kind of balanced values, but balanced look on like who Jesus is. And I was like, and they have like a little bit of every generation, which is exactly what you want. And at that time, Emmanuel was significantly smaller at that point because COVID had just hit and they lost quite a few people like that attended in person. But it kind of just stuck with us. And after we got married, it became our church and we attended a discovery class. That's when everything started like coming back out. You know, they were like, we're ready to go back up again in numbers and in everything that we need to do and like to push forward. And learning about Emmanuel, we're like, nope, this is where we want to go. It was the right kind of mix for both of us that mm-hmm. we felt like mm-hmm. we could grow individually and like other stuff that we needed to. And then also later down the road, we could also help other people grow and do that as well. So.
And it's not like it's a small church. It's not like it's a monster church, but it's enough that you can find your groups and you can mm-hmm. be involved in here and there. And Nicole also sings on the worship team. She's on stage and she's faced her fear doing that. Were you kind of just, how did that come about? Were you like, I just want to sing up there? Because I know I was telling you before this that I tried and I ran from that rather quickly.
Well, when we first got into church, I know that the best way to figure out what a church actually cares about is to volunteer. So I immediately went to Margo and went, sign us up for whatever volunteering that we need to do. Like, what do you want me to do? I got tons of skills. Use me where you need me.
Awesome.
So I ended up being a host. I ended up in the nursery. I ended up in Blast. Also ended up in like the older youth, the junior highs. And then Dyson ended up on the band because he had bass, and Dyson kind of just follows me wherever he needs me. So I would cook for discovery classes. He'd come in and be like, can I do something? He's kind of just follows me around to whatever I need as well. And then we kind of looked really low after some people graduated, like on the worship team. And I was like, okay, I am always been terrified of singing in front of people. I went through choir in high school, terrified, could never sing a solo by myself. No matter how many times Miss K was like, you can sing, I promise you. Like, don't worry about that. I'm like, I can't do it. Sorry, I probably suck. I'm just, and I just couldn't do it. So I was like, you know what? Okay, it's time to see if I can actually do this. That way I know if this is just a gift that I get to have on my own while I sing in the congregation, I'm okay with that. If this is a gift that I get to share in front of others, okay, sounds good. So I asked Pastor Phil, after my husband kind of nudged him, he's like, you should ask my wife about this. And so he asked me and he's like, okay, he's like, was this nudge correct? Am I doing this right? And I was like, yes, I do want to try. I was like, I haven't done harmony though after that point, like in a really long time. So harmony is still something I'm working on to this day. But the first time I got up on that stage, I was like, let's just see if I can sing in front of all the people. And I was very surprised. I had like been praying a lot before I got on the stage. I was praying while on the stage because I was panicking on the stage. I was like, I am so stressed. My heart is going crazy. I was like, but I need to breathe. And then I got up and I just sang. And I realized at a certain point, I was like, yes, I'm helping other people like worship. But I was like, in this moment right now, I was like, I'm also just worshiping to God. Like, that's all this is. Mm-hmm. I just have a mic attached to me.
Mm-hmm. Takes over. Yeah.
Yeah. So I am a worshiper. Like, that is one of my favorite ways to worship God, is to like worship in the car or wherever, you know. Mm-hmm. Singing is one of my things that I've always liked to do. Yeah. Even when I was young. So it was pretty easy once I got over the fear of like, just sing. And I mean, I still get up on stage and I still panic a little bit every time, but then I just stand there and go, all right, Jesus, this is just for you. If I do happen to mess up a couple of times, it's because I panicked and forgot that this is just for you.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. A full circle picture of your life. I thank you for sharing that. Just a couple more things I wanted to ask. Because of your background, what would you say you've learned about forgiveness or your experience coming through and forgiving for those two that may be dealing with such a large thing in their past to forgive?
I know this is probably get said a lot, but forgiveness is like, really most of it is for you to like let go. And forgiving doesn't actually mean that I end up forgetting everything that has happened to me, but it just means that every time that I think about that thing that happened in my life, I can like pray to God and be like, I need you to help me forgive again. Because every time I remember, I'm going to remember what has changed, what has hurt me. But every time that I forgive with Jesus' help, it changes who I am, and it changes that I've let go of what that person or whatever it is has like held over me. And it's now something that I've given to Jesus, be like, this is for you to carry. And I do it often. Sometimes I get trapped in that, like, I think about what has happened in the past and I get sad and I get angry about it. And then I have to remember, wait, I've already forgiven. And I say it out loud, I forgive you. And then I give it all to Jesus because I'm not meant to carry that. Mm-hmm. And it is like such a struggle to forgive, but it's kind of like you're like holding on to this like little barbed thing, you know, when you don't forgive, and it's like it's hurting you more than it's hurting the other person. And like I'm not able to reconcile with the people that I need to forgive, or but sometimes like saying it to them can also lead them to like a whole new light of like, wow, I needed forgiveness for this. And it can change somebody else's aspect on life as well.
Mm-hmm. Change their view, mm-hmm, when they know the circumstances that you were placed under, and to be told that they've been forgiven for that can be life-changing as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what kind of encouragement would you give to somebody listening today that may relate to your story, or different parts of the stages of your life?
The biggest probably encouragement I could give is like, in knowing who God is good, and you have to remember that in every single part of whatever's happening in your life, that it's like, he's not out there to get you, or this isn't because you did something and you're getting like consequences. It's like, sometimes it's like Job's story, where it's just like, we're all living in God's version of judgment and whatever it is. And it's like, I don't know what the story is going to end up coming out as. And like, I can just like only hope that God knows. And then if I'm telling myself God is good and I believe that, then anything that happens to me or to other people that I care about, that I know he's going to turn it around all for like good things and all for his kingdom. And then you really have to like trust in that. Be like, I do trust that God is good. And it is a hard thing to like trust Jesus. We're often just so doubtful, you know, in our faith. And I just think reminding yourself that it's like, it's okay. I know I'm doubtful, but if I just tell myself a little bit every day of like, hey, I trust God. I know he's good. Let's take this
day. He's in control. Yeah. That's your choice. Mm-hmm. I've chosen to trust you, God. Yeah. 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 Beautiful. And to end on something, to the listeners right now, I'm looking at Nicole's Bible, and it is a rainbow of tabs, and she tells me there's an organized system here, but it's chock full of tabs and colors. So I asked her to bring a verse that's important to her, and I got a little concerned because there's about 200 tabs there. So if you can just pick one, that's hard. Can you let us know what verse that is and why you chose it?
I'm not remembering it off the top of my head, but with 1 Peter 1:8-9, that's like, gladness not based on circumstance. It's actually the sticker on my Bible. Mm-hmm. It also coincides with the one in John where he said, it is finished, when Jesus said that. That's all the things of like, this is what it is, but everything that's happening in the world is like completely different than what's happening in God's kingdom. And it's, I'm going to focus on what's in God's kingdom because that's what matters. And a lot of the world will look at like what's happening in your life and stuff like that, and they go, wow, that looks awful, or you're doing the wrong thing. Like, you're clearly like not way up here in status. And it's like, no, you have it backwards. Like, my joy and my happiness and everything all comes from Jesus. And when he said it was finished, it was true.
That's beautiful. I just love that. Gladness not based on circumstance. Yeah. Well, it's been my total pleasure to hear your story today, and I know it will ring in the ears of those people listening, and I hope that they come and chat with you on a Sunday. And now we have the whole background, and the kids at Maple Springs are certainly blessed to have you and Dyson there, and I trust that you'll have a fantastic full summer. Yes. And many more, and living out there and your water was turned off. You're facing stuff all the time, but yeah, you're a calm presence for sure. And so thank you so much for being one of our very first guests on There's More to Life podcast.